So the text reads, conditions necessary for transcendent insight. Kamala Shila, in his second stages of meditation, states the three conditions for transcendent insight to be reliant on a holy person. So when we speak about our spiritual insight, it is something that involves analysis, investigation. It is not something that you simply have faith in something, saying that, oh, it must be like that, or believing something. Mere belief is not regarded as spiritual insight or analysis. So, as such, this kind of spiritual insight or the analytical meditation has to be actually taken into consideration through many from many angles. So just seeing as to if this should be the case, so what would be the disadvantage of that? What should be the flaw? And so forth. So in order to know all these things, you have to depend on a spiritual guide. And then whatever kind of instructions that you receive from this spiritual guide, you are to then integrate that into your practice, simply not leaving it at the intellectual level. And then, and again, the kind of the teacher to whom you are going to depend or rely upon should be someone who is highly experienced, who is highly learned in the great extensive teachings of sutras and the commentaries. So because if that teacher is not someone who is thoroughly exposed to all this literature, then even among the sutras, even among the literature of the Buddha and the great Indian successors, we see that there are a whole lot of different sutras and having some kind of some kind of contradiction, at least on the level of on the surface level or literal meaning. So there are, because of this, by way of skillful means, by the Buddha, you find some areas of his own literature, his own writings, where there are points which cannot be accepted by a fully accomplished person, so which are meant to lead or help some ordinary persons. As such, that teacher must have the capacity to identify all those. Distinguish all those different literatures. And then, when you are being guided by a proper authentic teacher, so on top of that, you should be also having the capacity to analyze by yourself. So, through that kind of process, you have to then upgrade yourself or traverse yourself through the various stages. So the primary in terms of the wisdom, there are three kinds of wisdoms. First one, the wisdom derived through hearing or learning. And so that is the stage where you depend entirely on a teacher. And through your exposure to the various literature, by way of the guidance of your teacher, then you try to reflect on the very content of these literatures, or this literature and the writings. And because of that, then eventually you'll come to a stage whereby you can make your own decision, saying that, oh, this should be the authentic understanding of emptiness. This should be the reality. This should not be the actual understanding of emptiness, so forth. So you must reach such kind of state. So when you reach that stage, that kind of wisdom that you've derived so is called the wisdom derived through analysis or reflection. And then, whatever kind of decision, authentic decision that you have arrived at, speaking about the concept of emptiness, the subtle concept of emptiness, so you are then advised to familiarize with that concept or that understanding. So then gradually, you will reach to such a stage whereby you can have this very So his son is just wondering if this word, the speech inside, is not translated in Chinese, because it seems like the translator is using the Sanskrit word vipassana. And then, so through familiarization, you will come to a stage whereby the very understanding of emptiness, very inside in the emptiness, will come to such a spontaneous fashions, spontaneous way, that whenever you can think of something, this concept of emptiness will immediately surge in you without any effort, without any difficulty. So that kind of wisdom that you derive at that level is called as the wisdom derived through meditation. And when you speak about the kind of the experiential understanding, so it could have two connotations. One, the experiential understanding in relation to shamatha or in relation to karma abiding. And there is the kind of thing that is being mentioned here, the wisdom derived through experience or wisdom derived through meditation. It should not be confined, it should not be referred to that kind of wisdom or that kind of thing, experience derived through karma abiding. Rather, it should be interpreted as something, the kind of the wisdom of emptiness, which comes to you in a very spontaneous, natural way. And in Asanga's literature, you find a mention of the four alliances. Not relying on the teacher, but relying on the teaching. Not relying on the words, relying on the meaning. And not relying on the interpretable, relying on the definitive meaning. And not relying on the conceptual insight, relying on the non-conceptual direct understanding of emptiness. And then it says in some other famous sayings that you should respect the teacher or the person, but analyze his teachings. So when you speak about some poetry or poem, it involves the pleasantness of the wordings. But in terms of the Buddhist teachings, it should be something that you should really reflect on the content, the content, as opposed to the mere wordings. So, speaking from the point of view of Vaibhashika, the lowest school of Buddhist school of thought. So, speaking from the point of view of the lower schools of Buddhist schools of thought, when you try to distinguish the definitive teachings of the Buddha from and the interpretable teachings of the Buddha, so they say that those teachings which can be accepted literally should be taken as the definitive teachings, and whereas those needs to be explained or interpreted should be understood as the interpretable teachings of the Buddha. And whereas according to the highest school of Buddhist school of thought, so this distinction or the differentiation between the two teachings of the Buddha, interpretable and the definitive teachings of the Buddha, should be made on a basis of the content rather than whether a specific text can be accepted literally. So in terms of content, so if a text emphasized on the teachings of emptiness, the ultimate, so that should be understood as the definitive teachings of the Buddha. And whereas those teachings which speaks on the conventional realities as opposed to emptiness or the ultimate reality, so that is classified as the interpretable teachings of the Buddha. So again, when you speak about how when you speak about the teachings of the Buddha or the concept of inherent existence, so most of the lower schools of thought, they say that since they do exist, true or inherent existence. As such, all those teachings of the Buddha which teach on the existence of intrinsic or true existence, so those teachings should be classified as definitive teachings. And whereas the other kinds of the teachings are opposing in terms of the content, so they should be understood as the interpretable teachings. And whereas then, when you speak of the Swatantrika Madhyamika, so they feel a little bit kind of uneasy to denigrate or to disregard the existence of inherent existence. And yet, at the same time, they don't propose the idea of true existence. So it is because of this that they say that even among those teachings which speaks about the existence of true existence, the Swatantrika Madhyamika makes the kind of distinction, saying that there could be two sets of teachings, even in those teachings which teach about the absence of which teach about the existence of intrinsic existence or inherent existence, saying that those teachings which teach on inherent existence and at the same time teaching the absence of inherency, so they classify that as interpretable, and those teachings which teach on the absence of true existence and yet the existence of intrinsic existence, they classify that as definitive teachings. And whereas the high school, highest Buddhist school of thought, that is Prasangika, they make it very clear, saying that as long as it is any kind of teaching of the Buddha which teaches on the existence of even inherent existence, it should be classified as interpretable teachings. And whereas those teachings which teaches on the absence of inherency, absence of true existence, it should be classified as definitive teachings of the Buddha. So even among the Buddhist schools of thought, we see divergence in positions as to what teachings of the Buddha should be classified as definitive and what as interpretable teachings. And the way in which one classifies the teachings into the definitive and the interpretable teachings of the Buddha, so they are actually two different traditions, one by the Asanga's tradition and the other the Nagarjuna's tradition. So both the two saint scholars, they are authentic, both they are equally both authentic teachers. So there is one Indian master, great Buddhist Indian master, who said that Nagarjuna is just an ordinary person, which means that he has not actually achieved any kind of levels of the Bodhisattva grounds. And whereas the Asanga, he is already in the first Bodhisattva ground. It is because of this that Asanga is higher, and his teachings, his way of interpreting the Buddha's teachings, should be accepted. And whereas the actual way that we should be doing is, first of all, study both these two sources, and then really kind of analyze, really employ your own wisdom and intelligence to analyze which of the two ways of interpreting the Buddhist intentions holds true. So if you do that, so we will then see that Nagarjuna's tradition holds true. It is more profound. So then from Nagarjuna, his tradition is being then passed on to Aryadeva, Buddhapalita, Chandrakirti, and so forth. And these two, Nagarjuna and Aryadeva, so these two are actually indisputably accepted masters of the Madhyamika school of thought or the Middle Way school of thought. So in terms of the root text of Nagarjuna, which is called the Root Wisdom, or sometimes translated as these verses from the center, so that text is then being kind of explained further by Chandrakirti and by Bhava Viveka. So the way, the manner in which Chandrakirti explained Nagarjuna's text is that he explained it, he interpreted that from the point of view of how everything is mere designated, mere imputed. And whereas the way Bhavaviveka explained Nagarjuna's intention or the root wisdom is based on the idea that there is a slight element of existence of inherency. So then here, Lama Tsongkhapa is saying that so despite all these things occurring at that time, and yet the way Chandrakirti interpreted the Nagarjuna's intention is the ultimate, is the most profound way of interpreting. And actually, he's the one who has he has fully unraveled the intention of Nagarjuna. In Buddha Palita, another Prasangika scholar, when he was trying to interpret Nagarjuna's intention, he was then rejected by Bhavaviveka. And Chandrakirti, trying to study, or after studying both the two commentaries, so he realized that indeed the way Bhavaviveka tried to reject Buddha Palita was not actually a proper argumentation. So he then, in support of Buddha Palita, he started writing his own composition or commentary to Nagarjuna's root wisdom, wherein he rejected in turn the intention, the way Bhavaviveka tried to explain Nagarjuna's intention. Question is, so since there are a whole lot of great masters are following different traditions on their own, so whose tradition should we be following then? So then, Adisha. So prior to the emergence of Adisha, so in terms of the view, for example, in Tibet, so people mainly come to follow the tradition of Chandrakshita, so which is the tradition of Swatantra Madhyamika. And whereas Guru Bhatna Sambhava, so although he didn't teach in an extensive way, but when we speak about when he was teaching Tantra, he was actually following the tradition which accepts the non-existence of inherent existence, mere designation. So which means he followed the tradition of Prasangika. So then when we speak about the other traditions of Tibetan Buddhism, like Sakya, Kagyu, and the other traditions, so no doubt they all follow the Prasangika's view of emptiness. And even in terms of the Nyingmapa, or the old translation school, so after the emergence of Adisha, even that section of Nyingma started following the view of Prasangika, the high school of Buddhist school of thought. And then there is another tradition, the Tibetan tradition called Chonangpa. So although they claim to accept the Prasangika school of thought in terms of the view, and yet they tend to have a slight kind of criticism, they make slight kind of criticism towards Chandrakirti and Buddha Palita, who were actually the propounders of Prasangika school of the school's concept of emptiness. Whereas Chandrakirti, he seeing that Buddha Palita actually made the commentary or wrote commentary on Nagarjuna's root wisdom, so this commentary Chandrakirti saw it to be complete in its fashion, in its form. It is because of this that then Chandrakirti kind of supported Buddha Palita's intention of explaining the Nagarjuna's thought.